On July 13th, 2024, the entire world witnessed a miracle. At exactly 6:11 p.m. in Butler, Pennsylvania, a gunman's bullet came within millimeters of taking President Trump's life and forever altering American history. And while one of those bullets tragically did take the life of a faithful husband and father protecting his family, countless patriots across the nation remain forever grateful to God for sparing President Trump's life. And yet, in the days and weeks that followed, those officials entrusted with the investigation of the assassination attempt, let's just say they've hardly inspired confidence. Quite the opposite. Their stonewalling and lack of transparency, together with the legacy media's complete blackout of this historic event, have only raised more questions. Questions that President Trump, the nation, and most especially, Corey Compatori's family deserve to have answered. Well, joining me today is someone who's on the front lines of getting those answers, the one and only Jack Posobiec. Now, for most of you, Jack needs no introduction. You've seen him with Tucker. You've seen him with Steve Bannon. Jack is a former military intelligence analyst, and he's the host of Human Events Daily on Real America's Voice Network. And he's got a brand new book out, Bulletproof, The Truth About the Assassination Attempts on Donald Trump. And you can get your copy by clicking on the link below or by visiting orderbulletproof.com. Jack, welcome, man. It's an absolute honor to have you here on the channel.
Well, I appreciate being here, and it was great having you over on Human Events the other day. Very, very well received. And I think you and I have been sort of rowing in the same direction for quite some time now.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad I'm rowing in the direction you're rowing. That's very good confirmation for me.
Some people will go the other way. It don't work out too well for them.
Let them. You know, what I loved about this book, and I was telling you, I was reading it over the weekend, is how it brings together your fields of expertise. So your background in military intelligence and analysts, you're a political analyst, you're a cultural analyst. But most especially, Jack, you're a man of faith, and you're a man who's committed to truth, which is uniquely symbolized in the cover image of this book. Can you share with us what inspired you to choose that particular photo of Trump for your cover image?
Of course. And obviously with your book and, you know, so many others, it's the iconic photo of Trump with his fist raised up in the air. And it's just this incredible, indelible, and clearly will be an image that is just remembered throughout history. We all know that is the image that will be remembered throughout history. You don't see something like that more than once or maybe twice in a lifetime. But to me, as a Christian, as a believer, I actually found a little bit more meaning, I thought, in the image that came immediately prior to the image that we all know. And this was an image of Donald Trump. And we've seen Donald Trump do so many things. We've seen him go around the world. We've seen him walk into North Korea without a security aides or a Secret Service. We've seen him going into all across Europe. We've seen him Iraq, Afghanistan. We saw him at a McDonald's yesterday. You know, we've seen him in every capacity. But there's one, even in a drive-thru, there's one sort of image of Donald Trump that we never saw, at least prior to that day. And that was an image of Donald Trump publicly before others and before the world on his knees. Wow. with his hands clasped before him as if he was in prayer.
Yeah.
And look, Donald Trump is a lot of things. And Donald Trump Jr. actually wrote the foreword to the book. We're very honored to have him do so. And I was sort of joking around with him, talking about the cover, and I said, you know, Don, your dad, he's known for a lot of things, but I don't know that, humility or being humble is, kind of.
That was the joke of the 2016 primary. Remember that?
Yeah. When it comes to Donald Trump, you know, his name's on more buildings than I think anyone else in the world, and you know, it's the airplanes and the hats and everything. It's Trump everywhere. So it's what he's known for. And so, but there is a history, and in fact, the biblical history of God sometimes choosing the unlikeliest of individuals to raise up and to give positions of great power, and then through that conversion be able to perform extraordinary works. Yeah. And in ancient times, this was what you would see when God would select a king or would anoint a king, as a matter of fact. And there was always one prerequisite, though, to all of this. There's always one prerequisite, and that prerequisite was to humble themselves before God. And you see this again and again and again throughout the Bible. The Old Testament, David, Solomon, the New Testament, you see it with Saul and his conversion to Paul, et cetera, et cetera. It's always an act of humility, an act of penitence. And so in that moment, and I haven't spoken to President Trump about this, and you know, I don't know if he would ever really, you know, explain it, and maybe even he doesn't completely understand it. But
right,
I've heard him, he's certainly spoken about it many times, though, is that he came out publicly and said, it was God alone.
Yeah, that's
those
right.
Four words, it was God alone. And so I believe it was that moment of prayer where God gave him his mission, gave him the lesson of humility, and then when it was accepted, that's what gave Donald Trump the strength. That's where the strength came from. That was not his own personal strength. That was something else.
Yes.
And we've never seen it before. And I say this as a guy who was in the military. I wasn't in combat, but I was in the military. I'm not Tim Walz, by the way. I'm not going to do that. But you've never seen someone in combat. And I've got friends who are Navy SEALs and Delta Force and JSOC and all the different, you know, outfits, where they say, wait a minute, when bullets are flying, when there's snipers out, when you don't know if the threat has ended, you get down, you get low, and you hide, and you turtle, and then you get to your cover. You get to cover, right? You go to your armored vehicle, whatever it might be. You don't stand up and put your fist in the air. It's the craziest thing you could do. And yet that's what Donald Trump did in that moment. He rose to his feet, even with the threat still imminent, threw his fist in the air, as if to say, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And if you want to kill me, take your best shot. Yeah. And it was in that moment where I said, this clearly must be divine intervention.
Yeah.
And you mentioned 6:11 p.m. Well, 6:11 p.m. was the moment that the shots were fired. And in fact, we have as the opening of the book, and I posted this tweet pretty early on when it was all going on, because I was watching the footage over and over and over. And then I started looking at other things that were in the footage. And this is what you do as an intel officer. You think, okay, well, what else do I see on the screen? And I've been able to do this with a number of other pieces of footage throughout the investigation and into the videos. But this one that caught my eye was the time is up in the corner. Cause when you watch live news, the time is usually there, 6:11. And it just occurred to me that Ephesians 6:11 happens to be one of my favorite verses in the entire Bible. Put on the whole armor of God that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And that is the invocation that we start the book on. And, you know, there are some people who put a lot of stock and really go in, and they know all the numbers and all the, you know, they go through the Bible and they can do all of it. I wouldn't say I could do any of that, but this one, man, it just hit me like a ton of bricks where I'm like, come on, come on, it's right there. It's right there. And then, you know, and then what have we seen since then?
Yeah.
What have we seen since then is the public invocation of Christianity by Donald Trump in ways that we've never seen before. And anyone who's followed this movement or followed him or just known him, I've had dinner with him. And, you know, I actually, when we had dinner last year, that I said grace with my wife, you know, prior to the dinner, and, you know, and he, you know, he sort of commented on it, and he said, oh, you did your prayer. You did your prayer for the meal.
You did that little prayer thing there.
Yeah. He did the little prayer. I think that is actually how he said it. He did your little prayer. And I said, I was like, oh, you got to, Mr. President, you got to. That's, he said, and he was telling me about some other friends who do that, that he had, and some of his golf buddies, you know, he mentioned that they'll do a little prayer before they go out golfing with him. I said, oh, they must pray a lot when they golf with you, Mr. President, you know? But you could tell where while he had respect for it, and I don't want to say this in a negative way, he had respect for it, but for him, it wasn't something that he had.
Yeah, it wasn't thing. It wasn't something he did. Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. But he was, you know, he's very respectful, and he supported it. But since the shooting, I mean, this guy is on fire for the Lord.
Yeah,
I mean, he invoked God in the very first post, post on Tweet Social. It was God alone, not language that we're used to hearing from Donald Trump.
That's for sure.
He had said at the RNC, he said, I wasn't supposed to be here today. The crowd starts chanting, yes, you were. I was in the room. He says, no, but I was given the chance to be here today.
Yeah.
And there's been things that he said in private where he's talked about this in terms of legacy. And now he's been invoking, he did the St. Michael prayer, St. Michael the Archangel.
I saw that.
Over and over and over, this
and Mary
embrace. Happy birthday, Mary! The great
exactly.
Happy birthday,
unbelievable. Happy Mary. We never saw that before. That's just
very, again, you know, this public embrace of Christianity. At the same time, by the way, where politically speaking, Kamala Harris is doing like the exact opposite, where she's attacking Christianity, which is like, you know, spirituality aside of it, when you're in, you know, the political arena and you're trying to win an election and you're, you know, going up into these swing states and you're looking, you're like, well, I need the evangelical vote. I need the Protestant vote, Catholic vote. Like, you want to try to win those people over. You probably don't want to be, you know, I don't know.
Excommunicating people say Jesus is Lord, you know,
Jesus is Lord. And you're like, oh, you're supposed to be in the wrong valley, buddy. Yeah. And you got Gretchen Whitmer doing like the Dorito Eucharist.
Oh, it's a disaster. It's a disaster.
I haven't seen that one there, Gretch. So
absolute disaster. But I just loved how you saw that.
And then he went to the Al Smith dinner.
Yeah, I mean, I love how you just saw that moment through the eyes of faith, and I think you saw that moment the way God saw that moment, Yeah, and then he rose, you know, and then he literally rose up to a blue sky and with the hand up. Somebody commented, the only thing that was missing from that picture is a bald eagle flying right across at the same time, you know.
And it's just one of the, and having been there, so I was not there at the first Butler rally, but I did travel in the course of researching the book for doing site surveys and learning about the scenery and, you know, just getting a sense of the lay of the land. You know, I traveled there, and then I went to the second rally, which he held, which again, you know, plays the Ave Maria very, very Christian. It was a memorial in many ways for Corey Compatori. His family was sitting in the front row, just a couple seats away from me with Eric and Laura Trump. And it was obviously very heavy for that reason. And it's something where that field, I mean, you go there and it's, and President Trump has said this as well, that it's sort of become almost a, you know, just the site that people travel to from all around the country and people are flying in from all over the world, because there is an understanding among believers that this was the site, and we can't understand it, and we're not supposed to understand it, but it's the site where a miracle was worked.
A bona fide miracle field.
Yeah, it's the miracle field.
The miracle field. Yeah, it's becoming a sacred space, no question. You know, I also want a huge shout out to you as well, because you did something pretty amazing in this book. I've written over 20 books throughout my tenure here in my adult life, but I have never written two books back to back within weeks of each other.
I don't recommend it, by the way. I really.
Yeah, I don't know how you did it. Because you're so decision, it's literally like a woman having children, but Irish twins or something
like that.
These
are the Irish twins of the books. And first of all, full credit to my co-author Joshua Lysak. Just an incredible guy, and we've done some interviews. You please have him on and ask him about that from that perspective, because he's a prior ghostwriter, and in his ghostwriting profession, he's done over, I think he's up to 96 books that he had written. But now he's, you know, sort of coming from behind the curtain, and he wanted to do the book with me. So we did an anti-communism book, about the real history of communism.
Unhumans,
and it can be defeated, called Unhumans. Earlier this year, New York Times bestseller, very, very successful.
Very successful.
And then I think, I think about 2 weeks into the media run of that is when Butler happened. And we're sitting
I looked it up. It came out like the first week of July. I mean, literally days before Butler. Yeah.
And we said two things. First of all, we said, well, we predicted in Unhumans that political assassinations would be something that would occur if you were, in fact, in a, what we called at the time, an irregular communist revolution, which is what we find ourselves in, what we call it. And then Joshua, who's, I'm totally giving him the blame on this, he calls me up and says, hey, we should write a book about all this. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. We're doing the other book right now. We're supposed to be focused on this. We have a plan to do this. That's what the publisher wants. Let's focus on this. You know, maybe we'll write a book on it in a year or something like that. But right now we're going to focus on this. And then my publisher calls me up and says, hey, you guys should write a book on this. I'm like, man.
How many do you need to
and just given the content, though, and the fact that everyone was talking about it and everyone was talking about the how could such a thing as this has happened? How is it even possible? How is there anyway so many failures? And you know, I think the answer is quite simple. And the answer, it's similar to the answer that we talked about in Unhumans. And I'll explain that very quickly and how I got to this. So in Unhumans, we say, they'll say that the essential question, I think I hear for this from, you know, conservatives or just non-communists all the time, they would say, how can you support communism when communism has killed so many people, 100 million people, it's complete failure, it's ruined economies. How could you ever possibly support such an ideology? And I would argue that they don't think that killing 100 million people and destroying all those economies was a bad thing.
Right.
They think it's a good start. So from their perspective, those people were anti-revolutionaries and those people were status quoers and right-wing reactionaries and conspiracy theorists and misinformation, disinformation agents. You get where I'm going with that. And so they needed to be removed from society so that the revolution and the utopia could eventually be achieved. Okay, so you have to flip it around on its head because that's what communists actually do.
Right.
So then when people said, well, how could there be such failures? How could there be such, you know, such mistakes, such lapses? And I'd say, what makes you think they're failures?
Wow.
So again, flip it around.
Right. Flip it around.
If you assume that the goal was to secure President Trump that day, then yes, they would indeed be failures. But if somewhere along the line, the goal was in fact to unsecure President Trump, then it was a resounding success.
Wow.
And from that perspective, we go through and we walk through what we define as 12 independent security failures. That's just on Butler. We also were able to, as you mentioned, the writing process, we were able to get preliminary information on the second attempt as well, which happened in September. We go through all of this and basically lay out to say that there's no way that these were failures. And even in subsequent reporting that's come out since we completed this book, where Congress, it just came out a couple of days ago at the end of last week, and said that the site lead agent was a female agent who only had 4 years out of FLETC. That's the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center down in Brunswick, Georgia. FLETC is where they, it's sort of like NCIS and it's sort of like Quantico for all the other secret special agents in government, so the 1811s. And so your Secret Service would go there, your OSI types for the Air Force, your NCIS and the Navy goes through there. I almost went there at one point in my career, but you know, decided I'd do this instead.
You don't get in as much trouble in this one, right?
Jury's out as to whether or not that was a good idea or not. It's funny because I actually do still know some people that are in the federal law enforcement. I said, hey guys, I have a tip for you. Maybe the next time when you're running a presidential event, you could share the frequencies with all of the agencies that are working. Just a little tip that I could pass along to you. And you know, and of course, it was sort of laughed at. But the real serious nature here is that why was it that someone who had so little experience was given the lead investigatory and protection duty of an outdoor rally for a guy who is arguably the most targeted individual on the face of the planet? and going to an outdoor rally, as everyone knows, since Dealey Plaza of 1963 and JFK, that, of course, an outdoor political event is inherently the most risky and potentially fatal event that you could ever do. It's ludicrous.
I love you. You took a third way in this book, which I really appreciated, because I noticed right after the vote, or right after the vote, we all know what we're thinking about these last 2 weeks here. Right after the assassination attempt, there were basically two assessments. Either this was apocalyptic incompetence, as I heard one person put it, on the part of the Secret Service, or more disturbingly, this involved actual complicity. Your book took a third way, which I really like. You called it it's something akin to intentional neglect.
Intentional neglect.
Yeah. Can you develop that a bit?
Sure. So an intentional neglect is this idea, and this was actually borne out in the House report in a way that, you know, I didn't have, I certainly spoke to House members, and we've interviewed them on my show in leading up to this. So it doesn't surprise me that we'd come to the same conclusion. And intentional neglect is essentially this situation where he's deprived of, and we know he's deprived of full site security. He's deprived of his requests for extra security being granted. He's deprived of counter snipers. By the way, only until just a few hours before the event begins in Butler, again, an outdoor rally with a former president who's currently running for president again. And just it is this systemic denial of requests and not taking things seriously that stems from clearly a decision made at the highest level. And whether or not the Secret Service, the head of the Secret Service that under the Bush administration, the second Bush administration, was placed under the DHS. So that's Secretary Mayorkas, that's Alejandro Mayorkas, was actually in charge of all of this. And so everything you see in terms of resource distribution that day, where 13 Secret Service augments were given to Dr. Jill Biden, who had an event in the same AOR that evening, the Pittsburgh area where I was yesterday, by the way, she was given 13 Secret Service augments for an indoor event at a restaurant, very small private event, whereas he was only given 3 for a massive outdoor rally. And the 3 that he was given, again, as we've discussed, not the most trained, not the most experienced, essentially the B team. And so what we then did after that was, well, 2 things we did. First was we took all of the, what we defined as 12 independent security failures, and we plugged them all into a probability matrix. And we took that probability matrix and we said, what are the chances of all of these things happening, 12 independent security failures, on the same day that a trained marksman with intent to kill would show up at a Trump rally and with malicious intent? And we plugged all that into OpenAI, so GPT-4 Omni. And the answer we got back was that the odds were 1 in 1 septillion, which is the same odds as flipping a coin 93 times and it always coming up heads. Now, if you or I did that at the casino, we'd probably be arrested because I was a genius, right? And so, or clearly, you know, you're like at a magician and they've got a trick coin or something, right? You know, and then this is very interesting. I'll read this verbatim because I want.
While you're doing that for people that you explained in the book, septillion. It's a new number I learned. 27 zeros.
27 zeros. Yeah.
Yeah. That's insane. In other words, it was intentional. That was your basic argument. Yeah. Please go ahead.
Before I say that, I'll tell you what GPT-4 Omni said, because we asked AI. We said, "What is your assessment based on all of this?" This is what GPT-4 Omni says. This is what the computer said. "This probability suggests that the occurrence of all these failures and the presence of the shooter is extraordinarily unlikely by chance alone, raising serious questions about whether these events were truly random." So there you go. That's the computer said. I didn't say that. You didn't say that.
Right.
Joshua didn't say that. The computer said that. That even a computer, which is, you know, GPT-4 Omni is typically designed to be, you know, I think a little bit more liberal too, by the
right,
way.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah.
But given a basic probability matrix, because we know that these large learning models are mathematical in sense, and even language itself is mathematical in many instances, it still came to the same conclusion. And so the second thing that we did, because look, I don't trust the federal government for a lot of reasons. Right. I said, I'm not just going to wait for the FBI to tell me what they think happened, or the Secret Service to shut everything down, or the ATF to send secret men in gray suits. And we, by the way, go through all that in here. We decided to hire our own private investigators and our own private investigation firm that is fully licensed in the state of Pennsylvania. And they have gone through doing the shoe leather work to actually go into Butler, PA, and then down in Bethel Park, PA, where this individual, Thomas Matthew Crooks, was living, where he was working, and he was planning this attack. And that's what it was, an attack. By the way, not just with his drone and his rangefinder and his sniper rifle, but indeed his improvised explosive devices, his IED.
Crazy.
Which is always something that gets left out in this story.
And rather sophisticated too, right?
Yeah. These were not pipe bombs like you would see from the the anarchist cookbook days in the 90s or the early 2000s. And they were not the pressure cookers that you saw at the Boston bombing and the Tsarnaev brothers. You know, these were sophisticated ammo can chemical emplacement bombs, which had a remote detonator, which the FBI director, for as all of the nonsense he has said, even admitted that Chris Wray admitted that if he wanted to set these off, he could have. And it's my contention, and our private investigators agree with this, that it is likely that because they were a bit smaller, that what he intended to do was to blow up his own car and then use that to, you know, potentially would have killed people. I'm sure it would have. But really what it would have done is create a distraction. And that in that distraction, he would have been able to use that to potentially get away through the crowd and through the ensuing chaos, which of course went awry because number one, his bullet missed, which again, I think he didn't realize that divine providence would play a role, a gust of wind, which is always how the Holy Spirit is referred to in the Bible, a gust.
Yeah.
And then of course that the stampede never took place because people did not run. People did not flee.
They stood their ground. Yeah. Yeah.
And President Trump has mentioned this many times, how he was worried that there would be a stampede. And that's actually one of the reasons that he wanted to show people that he was okay, to prevent something like that from happening. And yet everyone was waiting to see if he was okay. And there's so many eyewitness interviews in this. And my good friend Bricksuit was in the front row. In fact, the angel flag that you see on the spine here was the photo from Bricksuit, and we all know Bricksuit, we love Bricksuit. But he told me and says in the book that he was so close that he was able to hear when the agent said, "Let's move him," he thought that meant like, let's pick up his body move him.
And
at that point, he actually thought that perhaps, because remember, there's that 1 minute where
it was a long minute. I was following it live, almost live on X,
and he thought he was close enough to hear the agents, and he thought that meant move his body. And so clearly we need answers as to what went on here, and more than anyone else, the Compatore family deserves answers as to why their husband and father did not come home with them that day of the rally. And the FBI, and we detail in here great effect, their very suspicious behavior, cleaning the site. And the first time, to my knowledge, that the FBI has ever...
Yeah, the FBI cleans sites now? Is that what...
It's not something... When crime happens, I'm from the Philadelphia area, so I'm kind of familiar with this, unfortunately. But, the police don't clean up a body. They typically, that's on the property owner.
Right,
you could hire in a biological cleaning service and someone would come in and do that, but it's not a service that they perform. So this is the first time I've ever heard of that. Then not only did they clean up the remains that were left on the AGR building, they released the body back to the family for cremation without even going through the local coroner in Butler County. And the coroner in Butler County has said that he didn't even finish up his tox screen. He didn't finish up a full autopsy. There was some preliminary work that was done, but it wasn't finished. And Congressman Clay Higgins was saying in his report that he was, well, actually it was in the course of his reporting that he uncovered all of this, that the FBI admitted that they didn't have the body anymore. And so the missing body of the shooter itself raises very many questions. And I think probably the biggest question of all, and President Trump has said this many times, are these foreign encrypted accounts that the FBI refuses to open. Through my sources and through our reporting in the book, we've come to learn, and as of now, I have not received any updates on this, that the FBI hasn't even attempted to open those devices or tablets since September 9th. And so what they are focused on, though, is, and that Eric Olshan, the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania, Biden appointee, that Eric Olshan is instead, he has convened a grand jury, which was a story that I broke, that I guess Politico and the Washington Post and New York Times just weren't interested in. So he's convened a grand jury, and it looks like, and I'll say looks like because I don't have definitive proof on this, but it looks like their main target, just given what we've seen, seems to be the father of Thomas Matthew Brooks. Okay. And we've seen, of course, he's hired a pretty high profile defense lawyer. That's a very good indicator of this. We know that the rifle that was used at one point was his father's, but was then transferred to the son. He bought it from his dad, basically in a legal transfer, person to person, for I think about $500. So, and which is a legal sale, by the way, but at the same time, there are some questions as to whether or not the father was or had prior knowledge that this was going to be going on. Clearly, by the way, these IEDs were not ones that he had made for the first time. And so design and testing of them is something that our private investigators are looking into, because through device analysis, we have uncovered numerous devices beyond, by the way, what the Heritage Foundation put out that were communicating with Crooks and co-located with Crooks at his home and other places around the Bethel Park area that do not coincide with, you know, and these are not, you know, hangout spots or you know, his work or
social gatherings.
We're talking about going to places in the middle of the night, meeting up and, you know, staying there for hours. And then, oh, by the way, those same devices with a pattern of, so for example, I always tell this to people, you know, so I'll just ask you on the spot. Do you turn your phone off every day?
I do turn my, I think, yeah, you I was told I'm a boomer if I don't turn my phone off. A Zoomer once looked at me and said, don't you turn your phone off? So yes, I do turn my phone off.
But do you power it all the way down?
No, I don't power it all the way down.
Right. So most people don't do that anymore. It used to be if you had a flip phone, sure, you would power it down and you'd close it and it would open up. Most people don't power it all the way down. That's why batteries have an issue now. These phones were completely powered down for weeks on end. They were off the grid for weeks on end. And, you know, even in the course of business, I'm sure you'd have your phone every day.
Right.
These phones did not have that pattern. And they fit another type of pattern that we would refer to as burner phones. Mm. And those burner phones also continued for a time prior to the shooting, on the day of the shooting, and then even after the shooting for a small period of time, and then vanished.
Wow.
And so again, these are things that not definitive, but these are things that we are
very, very suggestive. Yes. Very suggestive. You
also suggest different things.
You also uncovered some very interesting travel itinerary information with the second would-be assassin, Ryan Wesley Routh. You want to talk just briefly about that? That was
odd. When the second shooting took place, or attempted shooting, I should say, took place, one of the first things I did upon receiving a photo of the individual, Ryan Wesley Routh, was run his picture through a facial recognition database, which scours the internet looking for other matches of the same face. And one, I was really looking for social media profiles, and we did find an ex profile. But something else really caught my attention very early on with this was a video that came out of Maidan Square, Ukraine, which was a recruitment and a support, essentially a propaganda film for the Azov Battalion. And the Azov Battalion in Ukraine is a neo-Nazi linked, or neo-Nazi supporting, I should say, ideological organization.
From their very roots. Yeah.
Oh, yes. That
Bandera.
Trained by the CIA to conduct assassinations. And anyone can read the New York Times' report on that.
Yeah,
and see all of this out there with the 12 CIA bases that were established in Ukraine on the border with Russia prior to the current conflict. And so this guy was a Ukrainian foreign fighter who had traveled there, received some level of training. In my reporting, I've not been able to confirm that. He was a bit older. He was in his 60s. And so it said that when he went to Ukraine, they didn't want to put him on the battlefield because of his age. But it does appear that he received some basic levels of weapons training. Then he also had at times traveled to places like Istanbul, Turkey, or Taipei, Taiwan, and have even been in media, featured throughout media, Newsweek and BBC and the New York Times, asking about this or trying to promote this plan to bring Afghanistan foreign fighters. So after the fall of Kabul, so go back to the timeline.
Yeah.
Kabul happens in August of 2021. Mm-hmm. Ryan Wesley Ruth is still in Hawaii at this time. Then when when the Russian invasion happens in February of 2022, he starts getting reactivated. He travels there in May of 2022 to Kiev, which coincidentally, I was also in Ukraine in May of 2022, although I was in Lviv, which is in the West. Kiev is right in the center, and then traveled down to Odessa. I don't believe I ever met him there, but you know, we're certainly checking our files to see if we did. And I did meet with other foreign fighters that I was there and reported all this at the time. And he was attempting to bring CIA-trained foreign fighters from Afghanistan into Ukraine to backfill some of the deficiencies of the Ukrainian army, which we still see on the battlefield to this day. We don't know if it's successful, but again, these are the exact types of TTPs that we would expect from someone who had some kind of involvement with national security agencies. So this is similar to when the true story of Benghazi, for example, wasn't that, you know, that they had a stand down order. The issue was, what was the CIA doing there in the first place? And what the CIA was doing there in the first place, and Tucker was just talking about this the other day as well, what they were doing in the first place was procuring weapons that they could send up to the rebels from Libya and then send them to the rebels, remember the moderate rebels in Syria, which they were then trying to use in something called Operation Timber Sycamore to depose Bashar al-Assad and this is back in 2020 or 2012. This is a program, by the way, Operation Timber Sycamore, which was launched by CIA Director John Brennan and then later curtailed by Donald J. Trump in 2017 when he went into office. One of the many, many reasons that the national security agencies are very upset with Donald Trump because he always
and you get into that a bit in the book as well.
It happened very close to when we were printing, and I actually had to, as an author, I'm sure you are familiar with that. As interesting and fun as it is to get to make that call and say, stop the presses, you also learn that it's very expensive to stop the presses, especially when you've already printed a number of copies.
And you eat it too, don't you?
because it's pulped. And so we had to pulp several thousand covers and start over again. But I said that... look, we all kind of agreed that it was the right move and the right thing to do to at least get one chapter in. So we did get one chapter on Ryan Wesley Ralph, and his photos feature prominently on the back cover. And the goal, just real quick, by the way, on all of this is that this is edition one of the book.
And that's what I was going to bring up.
Investigators, they're going to be continuing their work, and my goal is that if the book does well, we'll be able to continue the investigation, release more reports, and look, with the second attempt, I'll send people down to West Palm Beach. I'll send people to Greensboro, North Carolina, not far from where I'm at right now, or out to Hawaii where this guy lived. I'll even send people to Ukraine if I have to.
Yeah. So this is the first iteration. And I think, do you have a bulletproof project that you're working on? Is that the idea?
Yes. So at some point when, although the election's been taking up a lot of my time, I spent pretty much the whole day with Elon Musk yesterday up in Pittsburgh. Sweet. And then the tailgate. It was very interesting. Yes.
Are you a Steelers fan or are you a Eagles fan?
yesterday neither. I was a Pennsylvania fan.
There you go. I love it. Good, good.
And look,
that's a Donald Trump answer, by the way. I think
right.
Pennsylvania fan today.
Look, coming from the Philadelphia area, being an Eagles fan kind of comes with the territory.
It comes with the territory.
In an election like this, I think it's time to unite. You know, the East Side and the West Side. So I was there. I did go to the Steelers game. I did root for the Steelers. Great victory, by the way. Got to see them pound Aaron Rodgers' face into the pavement. And, you know, although it was incredible to see him play too. I mean, Rodgers just legitimately, clearly belongs in the Hall of Fame. There's no question.
Like
watching lasers just shoot from his hands when he throws that ball. I mean, he doesn't even cock his arm all the way back. He just sort of flicks his fingers and the ball magically shoots
the technique out. Unbelievable.
But I don't know if the Jets really
He's got the wrong uniform. There you go.
Got the wrong uniform on. And then of course Trump was supporting the Steelers. So, you know, what are you gonna do? And a come from behind win for them that day. But I was there for the Steelers. But with the Bulletproof Project, so hopefully at some point when we get more information going forward, what we're gonna do is launch the Bulletproof Project, which it might be a locals page. We're actually talking to the folks over at Locals about setting up a community there
for
this. So that it's a place where we're able to hang sort of, look, if we get various tidbits, if we get a hot fire report, or if we have, you know, potentially a lead and we want to reach out to others and say, hey, can anyone run this down? Does anyone know this person, or has anyone seen this account or have screenshots of whatever it might be? That's actually how we got the TikTok video of Thomas Matthew Crooks walking down the vendors. Was just through an online community where someone finally said, hey, I was there as a vendor and I filmed this, and I was going back through my footage and just filmed a random video, and here comes Crooks walking right down the aisle, which then of course gave me the ability to realize that, hey, wait a minute, the Turning Point USA flag was directly behind him, Turning Point Action. So I called up Noah Formica, who is the Turning Point lead representative for Pennsylvania. I said, Noah, go take a look at this picture of Thomas Matthew Crooks again. Did this guy come to your booth? Did your volunteer, can you show this to your volunteers? And as it turns out, they did remember Thomas Matthew Crooks. And I asked them two questions. Number one, how did he act? They said, very strange. Very strange, sort of a nose up in the air, didn't say anything, but they said he seemed arrogant, as though he almost had some kind of secret knowledge that nobody else had.
Yeah.
And wouldn't talk to them. You know, and they were, you know, they approached him politely and doing their jobs. Would you like to vote? Are you registered? Do you need an absentee ballot? That sort of thing. That's what Turning Point Action does. And just, you know, he almost scoffed at them with his body language, very dismissive. Mm-hmm. And arrogant and condescending. And then the second question, though, that I did ask was, anyone with him? And they said they didn't remember that anyone was physically with him that day, that time.
You got your Skype.
Yeah, my apologies there. My
I know the sound very well.
Trying to get going there, but you know, there's a lot to the book, and I just hope that when people get their hands on it, they can sink their teeth in. And we have some answers. We don't have all the answers, but we're working very hard to get there.
It's a wonderful, wonderful iteration. And what I love about it, as I'm reading through this, is we are in the position now to fact check the fact checkers. That's the beauty of being online, hyper connected, being in the network society. We now get to fact check the fact checkers, and that's what this book is doing, gang. It's absolutely an amazing book. It's got timelines, it's got maps, charts, direct communications. It's got everything we know up to now about what happened on J13 and September 15th, but at a whole nother level. So just click on that link below or go to orderbulletproof.com. That's orderbulletproof.com. Get your own copy. Get copies for family and friends. They'll be blown away by this. Remember, you're also going to be helping to support this ongoing work of the Bulletproof Project, which will continue to fact check the fact checkers, bringing updated reports in what is, like Jack said, an ongoing situation. These are one of the most chilling parts of the subtitle. I had to reread it a couple of times. These are assassination attempts, plural, that continue to threaten President Trump and his family. And this book is helping to shine the light of truth in the midst of that darkness. So make sure you order your copy.
If I could just add, we're also very honored and just very gracious that Donald Trump Jr. actually penned the foreword for the book and taped an interview with him earlier today that is going to be coming out, and just really, really honored for him to do that, because, you know, to him, this wasn't a political figure or a cultural icon or any of those things. This was his father.
This is his dad. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And like you said, I mean, just the whole extended family, they're all under a threat. It's
actually that golf course where Ryan Russell Routh was found is the same golf course that Donald Trump Jr.'s daughter, Kai, she's, you know, known for her golf. That is her course. That is where she goes and practices every week.
Yeah. No, this is and again, the very fact that the media blacklisted this is just, I mean, if this had happened, can you imagine if this had happened to Obama, for heaven's sakes? I mean,
right. That's why it's so important to get the story out, especially now going into this election.
Well, Jack, seriously, on behalf of all of us here on this channel, it's just a huge, huge thank you. God bless you for all the work you've done and continue to do. It means so much. We can't thank you enough.
God bless. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thank you.